Welcome to the Thursday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Guess what, folks? I think I keep saying before that we're going to get back on the Thursday schedule. We're doing one more Friday one, and it's just because we can. We're still in spring training. I am Paul Spohr, joined by Doug Thorburn. Doug, good day, sir. How are you?
I'm doing really well, man. My excitement and anticipation for opening day just gets bigger and bigger, the closer we get. It's pretty
Absolutely.
awesome.
Oh, I am sky high on it. I can't wait. Huge draft weekend this weekend. We are going to be in an auction together. It's just lots of stuff going on. I love this time of the year. I'm not as big of a college basketball fan as I used to be, but I'm still paying attention to the tournament and enjoy that. Random aside on that, I was surprised how late the games were. I don't know if you watch college basketball at all, but I was surprised that the games were on so late yesterday. But one of them started in the West Coast. Hey, that's better for us night owls. Because I was up late watching Rounders and flipping between that and basketball. Dude, Rounders is so excellent. I trust that you like that movie too. Yes.
Oh, I love that movie. I've got like 15 movies that are constantly in my office that I just put on cycle in the background, and that's one of them. Absolutely.
I love it. I just saw that I'd seen that it was going to be on Spike, and I don't usually watch movies on basic TV because I don't want to deal with the commercials, but I'm figuring, I can flip to the basketball game during the commercials. I absolutely love this movie. And the craziest thing was, I was just thinking about how great it was yesterday, or yesterday being Wednesday, and then it comes on Thursday night. I couldn't believe it. I love that movie. It's my favorite all-time movie, but I don't always think about it, so it was a little random that I was like, you know what? That's a really good movie, and then it comes on. So, Rounders, if you haven't seen it, and you like anything, about poker at all, I fully recommend it. I might even recommend it if you don't like poker, but you should probably have some like of it. Matt Damon, Edward Norton, John Malkovich, John Turturro, amazing movie. Anyway, let's get into it here. We're gonna do something a little bit different today, because we just haven't seen a ton of news that we really need to cover. At least I don't think we have. Danny Salazar got sent down. Okay, that's a little bit of a something. Opening day starters are being announced. Tyler Clippard was officially announced as the interim closer, et cetera, et cetera. But nothing that I think is necessarily gonna be pushing you one way or the other on your drafts this weekend. Taijuan Walker, fifth starter job. Okay, well, we're already taking him ahead of Roenis Ilias anyway because he's a much better talent. Jace Peterson going to win the 2B job for Atlanta, but who cares because they're terrible, and I don't think he's that good. Now, there's one piece of news that I want to get your take on before I tell the folks what we're going to do today, but Kevin Gausman looking like he's going to be maybe used as a reliever, and part of it is kind of his own fault because the slider's not ready. And we saw that in Living Color yesterday when Victor Martinez ripped one. And, we're not going to base it all off of one pitch, one hit against an amazing player like Martinez. So I'm not even saying that I agree with Baltimore because of this. I'm just saying that I think they realize that it's not quite ready, and that's why they're considering this. How do you feel about this with regards to Gausman?
I disagree with the decision just because I think that it's really easy to move a guy to the bullpen, but it's really hard to move him back to the rotation. So it feels like a semi-permanent move, even though I'm sure that's not what their design is. I'm sure they're thinking, okay, he can earn his way back to the rotation. The problem is that doesn't really happen. He already has two elite pitches. I mean, his fastball, it registers like, I think it's 95.8 or something like that on average. It's like top 10 in the
Yeah, it's
majors.
filthy.
And that splitter is insane. That thing is just mean. It's nasty. And yeah, the slider's a little bit behind, but it seems to me that if he had the fastball breaking ball with the changeup that was lagging behind, it would be easier to kind of make that sell.
You're right.
And maybe that's an organizational thing. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just totally off, but I was really shocked by that. Especially the Orioles seem to have a ton of depth. What they lack is upside. That's exactly what he brings to the table. And he's a player who has improved his mechanics. His stuff is still in development. But when you look at the learning curve, this is a guy that one would expect to get better over the next couple of seasons. I would absolutely invest in him otherwise with basically any organization that was planning on starting him. So I was really shocked to hear that they're thinking of moving him to the bullpen. And I don't quite see the logic there. I mean, even though the stuff makes sense.
Maybe it's just to light a fire under him because I think he's still going to get one more start next week, and it ticks me off. Obviously, that's a guy I've been really hot on all off season here, leading into the year. So I really hope that he can get there. Ubaldo Jimenez is supposed to be the guy to take it over, though, so I doubt that he would hold that very long. So I'm not that worried. And speaking of guys that we like, that's what we're going to do today. We're gonna really deep dive into four guys each that we just really like, not necessarily because of their cost or so we're not just doing value plays. We're just doing four guys that we each really like, and there's going to be like a little stipulation. One early round guy, you know, kind of picks 1 through 50 or 60. One mid-round guy, kind of in that 61 to 120 range. And then a couple beyond there, 120, pick 121 or later. So like 10th round or later in a 12-team mixed league is what we're looking at here. And we're just going to talk about them and explain why we like them. And maybe if you're not sold on them, you jump on board with us. If you're already sold on them, then maybe you'll feel reinforced. But I just figure we want to talk. We're going into like major draft weekend. Why not talk about some guys that we really love this year that we are just trying to get everywhere we can? So, Doug, I'm going to let you kick it off and give us your first guy here. Talk to me about your number one guy and why you like him so much.
Well, I mean, this might seem kind of obvious, but my number one guy, for me, it's Andrew McCutchen. And it has more to do with, like, I feel like right now it's Trout and then a big decision for number two.
You're right.
In my opinion, there is no decision. It's Trout and McCutchen, and then the decision-making starts. In fact, I think McCutchen is closer to Trout than he is to whoever you would consider to be number three. Similar skill set, and one thing I look at, especially near the top, you want ceiling, of course, but you also want floor. You want a guy who's not going to hurt you. McCutchen's hit 314 or better for three straight years. He has a 400 OBP or better for three straight years. In fact, he led the majors with his 410 last year. He has had an OPS plus of 157 or better for three straight years. He's played 148 games or more for the last four seasons. I mean, and when you look at what he did while compromised in September last year, the way he hit, despite the fact that he was obviously ailing from the HPP he took, he had, fractured ribs. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do. And he's the ultimate across-the-board contributor. I mean, his minimums over the last 4 years, I mean, if you were to mix and match the worst he has done, that would be an 87 run, 83 RBI, 21 homer, 18 steal season. And that would be mixing and matching from, like, the last 4 years, the worst he's done. So the floor is just extreme with him. I'm way up on McCutchen this year.
And I like that one. And I think this is a perfect time for us to have done this, for you to name him, because I think there is some trepidation with him right now, with regard to the injury that he was suffering. Nothing major. I don't think there was anything about missed time or anything like that, but wasn't he suffering from something that kept him out a couple games in spring training and had people freaking out because of his back? So I think this is a good time for you to kind of plant that flag and say, you know what, he is my firm number two guy, because I heard that he dropped to 7 in a league, which was crazy. So
wow.
good pick there. And my first guy is a little bit lower, but still kind of one of those star level types that I'm really excited about, and that's Carlos Santana. And this isn't just OBP leagues, though. Obviously, in OBP leagues, bump him up several rounds. I think we've discussed that on this very show. But even in standard leagues with batting average, I really like him. I think there's a chance for a huge breakout this year. And I'm talking where he isn't a batting average deficiency. So even in an average league, I feel like he can hit 270, 275. I know that's not knocking anybody's socks off, but when you consider that he would take his only deficiency and make it a neutral, and maybe even a little bit of a plus, depending on how deep your league is, because that's just where we are now, that a 270 could actually be a net benefit if you're in a deep enough league. But where I'm really seeing the potential breakout for somebody like Carlos Santana is with his homers. We've seen the power now a couple different times. I mean, actually, throughout his career, it's been there, but we've seen the big power, a pair of 27 homer seasons, and that was with giving away 2 months last year. I mean, he was garbage for those 2 months, did not do anything, and still rallied to go 27-85. I really think there's a 3100 season in here, because I trust the Indians offense, I think, to get a little bit better this year too, to give them some more opportunities. And of course, if they're going to give them more opportunities to drive in runs, there's a good chance that the guys behind them are going to have a chance to drive him in as well. And even if the average doesn't come along, the runs scored could still go up because of that OBP. So I just think that being set at one position first base and just playing it, although he is still third base eligible, I think the moving around last year was a problem for him, but just playing one position, maybe DHing every once in a while Brandon Moss kind of gets in the field, those sorts of trade-offs. But really just being a first baseman is going to help Santana, and I think he's in the midst of his power peak here, and we're going to see a big 30-homer season.
Yeah, especially as far as the focus point and, the difference between going from multi-position to single position, he even caught a little bit last year. So I know in like Yahoo leagues, for example, he qualifies a catcher because their requirements are down a little bit. And then they didn't play him back there once he got I forget what the injury was, but he got nicked while he was behind the plate. And after that, I think it was in May. And after that, they didn't use him back there at all. But as far as that impacting that slow start of his, he was kind of all over the place. So now to be able to simplify that aspect, where especially with first base, where there's less of a defensive transition, for the most part, you hope the guy can scoop the low throw, but you're not that worried about his defense at first. It's not like the hot corner. It's not like especially behind the plate. So I think he's the case where you're going to give that even a little bit of extra credence because it is such a major move for him. And when you look at the shape of the season last year, I think it's a good call. I mean, the walk rate's insane. He's walked 90 or more times 4 years in a row. He can, if you're in an OBP league, he's going to get you your 360 or better, even if he hits 230. So there's so much potential here. I like that pick a lot.
Thank you. Now we're going to, unsurprisingly, get into some pitchers here because that's just kind of what Doug and I do. For those of you unfamiliar, we wrote the starting pitcher guide, vspguide.com. Cheap plug, I'll do it. I'm not above it. But like I said, when we gave each other our list, I'm not surprised that we each had at least two pitchers on there. So now we're going to each talk about our next two pitchers. So, Doug, go ahead and give me your first pitcher. By the way, I love this one too. So it's going to be hard for us not to both fawn, but I'm going to keep you within a bit of a time limit here. Talk about Mr. Gerrit Cole.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm really big on Cole. I feel that he was a little bit overrated last year. A lot of people were looking at just how much improvement he made and how quickly he's made it. And we're anticipating that that would be a nice steady line of improvement. And when he didn't quite fulfill those expectations, it's kind of the fantasy knee-jerk reaction to step away from the guy a little bit. Now, don't get me wrong. He's still highly ranked. I think he's like the 20th pitcher off the board, starting pitcher. Personally, I would put him in that top 15, maybe top 14 or something like that. I really like this guy. The velocity is legit. The mechanics, he actually moved up into A status this year in the starting pitcher guide. He was a B-plus last year. He's moved up to A-minus. He's improved the one weak link in this chain, which was his momentum. He's league average now, but to move up from the 35-40 that he was the last couple of seasons, I think is really big. He's shown improvement as far as that consistency, being able to repeat that type of momentum. So I think the sky's the limit with him. And I think the Pirates really need someone to front their rotation with what is clearly a playoff caliber offense.
I'm 100% with you. Like I said, this is a guy that it's hard not to want to fawn over entirely all the time because all the stuff is there for just an amazing kind of season. And we saw it down the stretch. The strikeouts were there. It was against some inferior competition, but I don't think that he needs to rely on inferior competition to have a beastly strikeout rate. And by the way, it's not like he wasn't striking guys out before that late run that bumped him up to 24%. And it's not like he can't. It's more of a choice, the organizational philosophy. We all know about the ground balls and the efficiency piece. If he wants to use his secondary stuff more, then the strikeouts are going to come. And this is a guy who, honestly, I think can be like a 10-plus strikeout per nine kind of guy for a season. Like, he's got that kind of stuff. So, love the pick. I can't back it enough. Can't wait to see what he goes for in our auction when you and I are going toe-to-toe on him.
Yeah, I think there could be a bidding war for a few of these guys, and I think that he's one of them. I mean, who else throws a triple-digit two-seamer? Some were calling it a change, but the fact is it was a pro-native fastball hitting triple digits. That's insane. On top of it, he has multiple breaking balls. Now, granted, maybe we're getting into the semantics of slider and curve because the velocity bands are pretty tight there, but they have different movement patterns. So clearly he has two different breaking balls that he uses. He uses them effectively. I mean, He's the perfect breakout candidate. even if he was a good breakout candidate last year, the fact that now the consensus has moved down, while in my opinion he's gotten better, that just makes him an even better choice this season.
Completely agree. For my first pitcher, it's Gio Gonzalez. I think I've been talking about him a good bit when I can as the forgotten National. And I really like him because he has been a bit forgotten and been pushed down a little bit in the rankings because everyone wants to kind of get the sexy new young thing like a Garrett Cole. And, I can back that. If you want to take Cole ahead of him, I can back that. But I don't think that you should forget about him. And I'd love to get both. But, I think like a Garrett Cole, Carlos Carrasco, of course, Matt Harvey zipping up the rankings. They're taking some love away from Gio. And I can understand it on all three. But don't forget about Gio. And if you want a little bit more certainty, maybe you got Sale as your ace. And obviously he's dealing with the foot. Shouldn't be anything long term. Nothing to freak out over. But if you want maybe a little bit more comfort or reliability, I think Gio is a guy that you can trust. Even though he was hurt last year, I don't think it's going to be anything long term. And he was coming off of four full seasons before that of 200, 202, 199, and 196 innings. Gio Gonzalez always been a big strikeout guy, and the walk rate has slowly come down. And first year last year got it down below 9% at 8.6. So of course it still rounds up to 9. I get it. But he's made it work because he doesn't give up hits at a huge rate. So the fact that he does, still contribute a lot of walks keeps his whip at a certain level. It's going to be hard for him to ever have a great whip again outside of that career year when he had a 113 because of his 267 BABIP that year. But anytime that Gio Gonzalez is kind of around that league average BABIP, his whip's going to be a little bit on the higher end among the studs. So we're talking like low 120s. But he'll more than make it up with the innings that he's going to give you, the strikeouts, and I think the ERA is going to get back down to where we're used to seeing it from last year's 357. And it's not like last year killed you at all either. It's just that it wasn't as good as we'd seen those previous 4 years. I think he's going to get back down to the low threes, big strikeouts, and of course, can't predict them, but big, big, big win potential on that ball club.
Yeah, agreed. I think that wins are tough to predict, but he is as safe a bet as any. he's really improved things since moving over to the Nationals, and part of it is he made a couple of mechanical tweaks, real small, but just got himself angled better. So we've seen his K to walk, which was around 2 in Oakland. It's been 2.5 to almost 3 while he's been with Washington. That walk rate just keeps stepping on down. The K rate holds firm. He's consistently kept that hit and home run rate low. So I realize a lot of the trepidation when it comes to hit rates, but the guy hasn't allowed one greater than 7.8 hits per 9 in 5 years. It's clearly his stuff is tough to hit. I think at the extremes, you can trust that kind of stuff. I think in the middle, it's definitely gray, and you have to be careful when it comes to hit rates. But someone who has allowed, less than 0.8 homers per nine and less than 7.8 hits per nine every year for 5 years, meanwhile throwing 195 plus, like you said, innings last year was back a little bit. But it's interesting, I'm not a big FIP guy, but it does give you an indication of his strikeouts versus his walks and his homers. So last season, his ERA was up. It was a 357, which was just barely above league average. But his FIP was a 302. It was actually the second best of his career. So I think that people are overreacting a little bit to what was going on last year. And, the time that he missed, it's not like he only pitched 50 innings last year. He pitched 158 and two-thirds. So
exactly.
To me, the durability didn't take a major hit based off of last season.
And you always have to be careful when you're going to go out and cherry pick starts and say, well, if you take out this, that, and you can't be going and doing that for like 8 different starts. But he had a super dud in there against his former team, the Oakland A's, where they got him for 7 4⅓. And that's just not common. So you're not going to see stuff like that from him very often. And so, I don't fret over that ERA, especially because that start, the reason I do think you can kind of cherry pick it out is it came right before the injury. He had that one, 4⅓, 7 runs against Oakland, and then 3 innings, 5 runs against New York, the Mets, and then he was on the disabled list. So, you can almost give him a little bit of a discount on those, saying that the injury might have been playing a role already, and then all of a sudden that 357 ERA not looking so bad. So let's talk about your next guy here. And there's one big question about him, and I want you to address it at some point when you're talking about Cashner. Can he play a full season?
You know, that's always been the big question with him. And obviously he's what's his high? It's like 100 and is it a 123 or something like that?
I think he's got a $150 in there somewhere. He does have a buck fifty. For you. $175.
Yeah, 175 actually. So, 2 years ago. We got it at the same time.
He was great. he was great that year, and obviously he was amazing last year for 123 innings, but I want to feel like I can get that 32 start season from him because it could be special. Do you think he can get there? Or better yet, do you see anything precluding him from potentially getting that because of the mechanics at all? Is it just something that's in there, or do you see something in the mechanics where you're like, yeah, I can kind of see why he gets hurt on the regular?
I actually love his mechanics. Okay. I gave him a B plus in the starting pitcher guide. I mean, he's a great blend of power and stability, huge torque that helps fuel the big velocity readings. The arm side run on his two seamers is just insane. I'd like to see him, you know, shape up the secondaries a bit. But honestly, I'm not as worried about the workload. Part of it's his age. He's 28 now, so it's not like, you know, we've got a young guy who is still working his way into physical peak or physical prime. He should be there theoretically. I'm really encouraged by the fact that every time he has been hurt, and the injuries have been mostly disconnected, he's had multiple ones to his shoulder, which typically saps velocity, but he's come back with his same old velocity, which to me is really encouraging. So I see a guy, granted, I think I ranked him really high when I did 3-year rankings because I see it as a steady progression. I think he's going to get better over the next 3 years. But seeing where he's at right now, let's see, his ADP is number 153 right now. And pitcher-wise, I think he's like number 41. Mm-hmm. I would comfortably bump him up 15 spots on the starting pitcher ranks just for this year. If looking at a 3-year window, I might move him up a whole lot more than that. Because to me, he has the mechanical baselines, the stuff baselines. The health is a question, but I don't see anything blatant that would make it a huge worry. Not to say I'm not worried. I'm not sweeping it under the rug, but I'm not as worried as I would be with a player who, like you said, had mechanical issues or maybe had a repeating injury or had shown a tougher time coming back from the injuries he's had. So with Cashner, I'm not worried about a big innings bump hurting him because of his age. Mm-hmm. And so I see a lot of upside there, and I think he's worth much higher than where he's being taken right now.
Yeah, like I said, I am with you. I just do have that one question. I'm like, I'm investing in him, but what can I really expect for innings? So I've been kind of being cautious about it and saying, you know what, I'm gonna plan for $160, and I'll take anything else as gravy. What I really also want to see, because I think it's in there, it's in his arsenal. I want to see a strikeout jump, and I think he can do it because of the nasty stuff that he has. But he also seems very comfortable getting massive ground balls and being efficient. So I kind of like that though when it's really up to a guy. And it's not a skill thing. He can get the strikeouts if he wants them. We'll just see if he wants to take them and if he can be efficient with it. Because if he can't, then I'm glad that he's going to say, you know what, I can't get them efficiently and I can't go 10 pitches on every batter.
Well, and in fact, his profile reminds me a lot of Jordan Zimmerman's a couple years ago, where we had a lot of the same questions, whether it was health related or looking at the K rate, where, you know, that wasn't his approach. He probably could get more strikeouts, but his job is not to make your fantasy team better. It's to win ball games with the Nationals. So I kind of see the same thing with Cashner, where I do think his strikeout rate could jump up. In the minors, it was like 8.4 per nine or something like that. So I think he could get closer to the 8 range. The last 2 years has been under 7, so clearly it's been an issue. But meanwhile, his biggest problem was command, and he's completely fixed that. He's reversed his biggest weakness. So now's the time that he does have pitch command to start seeing what he can do with the strikeouts as far as, okay, now that he can put the ball where he wants to, how is he that going to change the way he attacks hitters this season? So I'm very curious to watch him. I'm definitely higher on him than maybe anybody. But at the same time, I think even if you just moved him up 5-10 spots in the ADP, you'd be able to get him as your third or fourth starter, and he's the type of guy who could win a league for you.
Where do you have him in your rankings?
I have him So I have him probably in the 20 to 25 range.
Okay, you are okay. Cool. Then yes, you are higher than me, but I got to be close in terms of second highest because I got him up there right at 30. So,
Okay,
you
there you
know,
go.
but yeah, no, I hear you, and I hear you taking that stand with him. My guy like that, where I've got him, I think probably higher than just about anybody, is my next guy here, Michael Wacha. I absolutely love this guy, and I've been fawning over him, and I'm fairly certain I've talked about him on the show here, but I couldn't get away without including him, just for the sake of mentioning somebody that I hadn't already mentioned. That's I like him so much this year. I've got him. Let's see. 20th, flat out 20th on my rankings right now in my tiers, because I just think he can be special and ready to be dominant the way people were thinking he could be last year when I was balking on him a little bit because his price was so high. And the concern I had is something I've mentioned. He doesn't have a breaking ball. And he said, "You know what, you stupid idiot? I'll give you two." And I was a stupid idiot. And so he jammed that in my face. He comes back with a curve and a slider, both that look great. And if they are used properly in quotes, I guess, because it's my opinion. But if he puts them proper deployment against the right handedness, you know, obviously the slider to righties, the curve to lefties, then I think it can be really special. The curve to righties was beat up a little bit last year, and maybe it's something that he can fix and still use it against them, or maybe you just don't worry about it and just focus on that slider because it was devastating against them. So I just love it's all there for him. He just needs to stay healthy, and I've said it a million times. I'd rather bet on a profile that has all the skills in place to be amazing and just needs you know, health to click, as opposed to something else where I need two or three skills developments, and the guy's already healthy. Now, I mean, obviously I want guys that are healthy, but give me the complete skill set, and I'll take my chances on getting 195 innings out of him.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I think you and I were on the same boat last year as far as his being completely overrated because people were extrapolating 65 innings at the big league level as if that's the norm. Well, last year he basically repeated that. It was only 107 innings and he dealt with the injury. But you look at a guy who added two pitches and was able to basically retain essentially the same numbers as the year before. His ERA went up a tick and his K and walk rate, you know, went in the wrong directions slightly. But given that it was only 65 innings, that was actually better than what I was maybe expecting from him. So I hear you. I think he's kind of in the cold case where people were expecting so much last year that even though he actually had a good year, it was viewed as a disappointment. And so now his value has gone down. I think that in the ADP rankings, and he's what, like 31 or something like that among starting pitchers, or actually, no, 34. I think he could easily jump 10 spots. I see 10 guys I would rather have Waka than the guys ahead of him.
Yeah, and that's another big piece of it this year. And he's slowly starting to move up because when the season started and the data started collecting, he was in the upper 40s there, and now he's in the mid 30s. So I get it. Obviously, the spring training is having an effect on that, and that's not driving my love for him. It's only solidifying it, but I'm not trying to get giddy over a 1.76 ERA and 0.85 WHIP. I think that's through four starts. I don't know if he's had a fifth, but he's been filthy so far in spring. But again, I like him well before that. If anything, this pisses me off because it bumps his price up. I almost would rather either he have just kind of a nondescript spring or even one where he's like still working on the curve and the slider and he got hit around a little bit. But the fact that he's out there with a 13-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio probably is going to make my life tougher when I go out there and try to buy him. But so far, I've been able to get him in a couple weeks, and I'm very happy about Michael Wacha. I think he's going to be a star this year. Who's next for you? Or who's last? This is your last guy.
The last one for me, and this is more of a value play. It's not so much that I like him better than everybody ahead of him or anything like that. But I've got Dalton Pompey, who he's number 282 on the ADP list, so I went pretty
Oof.
deep for this one. But I just look at, you know, to me, steals are really highly valued this year. They're costing people a lot of money. The center field job is essentially his. He's got it on lockdown. He's a guy who I have to double check, but he was basically a 40 steal a year guy in the minors. I mean, he's someone who I think could easily clear 30 this season without too much of a reach. And his power exists. He's
Yes.
not one of those speed-only guys, you know?
Let me check you on the speed here. You're exactly right. 43 in just 500 plate appearances last year, 38 the year before in 511. That's 115 in 113 games that he played, and Pompey was stealing at that clip. So he's looking like he's got the red carpet laid out for him to get a full season's worth of playing time. So he could be running wild. And then the point that you make about the power means that he's not just going to be a Ben Revere. And it's nothing against Ben Revere, because there's still tons of fantasy value when a guy's hitting 290 with 45 steals or whatever. But if you can even get 7-8 homers, it's a big difference. I know 0-7 might not feel like it, because you're still looking at a single digit there, and you're like, well, is that really that special? It's a big difference in the fantasy value, in my opinion. It's almost like when the power guys can get a few steals, like a Joey Votto or an Albert Pujols, when they're running and getting 8-10 steals, how much that changed their value. I think it's maybe not as high, but for a guy like Pompey, if he can punch double digits, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm that he could get 10 in that ballpark. He popped one today, in fact, off of Justin Verlander. Now, everyone's been doing that lately, so that's maybe not that special. But like you said, it's nice to see that he can muscle up and actually pop a few. Good pick here with Pompey. I really like him. And that lineup, I think, is going to be ridiculous. So even if he's batting at the bottom of it, 7, 8, 9, I still think he can be a huge asset. And, and I don't want to predict injury, and I don't want to say it's inevitable, but Jose Reyes is not the model of health. And who do you think they're going to slide up there if that happens? I think it would be Pompey, because Russell Martin's batting 2, so I doubt they're going to send Russell Martin up to 1 there. I think they'd bring Pompey up and then push everyone down that way if Reyes had to miss any time. So great pick there.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the lineup. I think that in Toronto, I mean, he might be batting near the bottom at the beginning, but if you're batting right before the murderer's road they've got going on there, that's not a bad thing. And like you said, with Reyes always being hammy injury away from losing all of his value, he could be bumped up to the leadoff spot, especially if he's successful. So, with at 282 overall, you're not taking much risk. If things don't work out, too bad. But I think he has as good of a chance as any to definitely lead the American League Rookie of the Year race. The fact that he's starting the year with a full-time job is a huge advantage. He's on the right roster for it. And regarding those homers, if you had a 25 homer guy or someone who you had penciled in for 25 who cleared 30, you'd feel pretty great about it. You feel like he had a great season. Well, Pompey allows, if you compare him to the other stolen base guys, he basically makes it as if your 25 homer guy did hit 30.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you there. So that's a great point as to how that power can be used. And I think there needs to be more of that kind of combining players and like almost pairing them. And we're seeing this popularize. I think Ron Chandler was the first one to really write about it and say that he took Ben Revere and Chris Carter purposely together, because then when you smash them together and divide by 2, you're looking at a couple Ian Desmonds, and that works. If I told you I'd give you 2 Ian Desmonds in the rounds that you paid to get Carter and Revere, I think you'd take it. Obviously, you have to use 2 roster spots, 2 different roster spots to get them in outfield and first base, so it's not quite as valuable as Ian Desmond playing shortstop. But the basic point is very smart, and I agree with it. I think you should be pairing the guys. And I believe that you and I talked about this on the podcast before about pairing pitchers too, being smart about who you're getting, pairing like a Francisco Liriano with a Doug Fister, something like that. So you can also do it in the hitting area, and Pompey is somebody who gives you that little tinge of power. So good call there. I like his name a lot.
Agreed. So who's your last one?
My final guy is Arismendi Alcantara. And another one of those guys who's super late. So, almost flyer type and probably even a deeper cut than Pompey, because Pompey has got the spot. That's his spot. You can draft him confidently knowing that if you need speed, you got him. Alcantara doesn't necessarily have the spot, but we've been hearing pretty much since he signed with the club that Joe Maddon was going to probably try to use him as a Zobrist type, that super utility, not just a utility guy who comes in a couple times a week, but a super utility who almost plays every day, but maybe doesn't play the same position twice in a day, or 2 days in a row, I should say. I don't see him slotted in the starting lineup just yet right now on roster resource, but Javier Baez hanging on by a thread. I'm not in love with Chris Coughlin in left field, Mike Olt at third base. There are spots here for him to get playing time. So I'm not really worried about Alcantara getting the PT. It's just a matter of if he can make more contact than he did last year. But even making a 205 batting average with 93 strikeouts in his 300 plate appearances, even with that, he still had 10 bombs and 8 stolen bases, which paces out to a full season of 23-19. Now, I don't think he's going to get the 694 plate appearances it takes for that pace. But even if he gives me 12-12, honestly, I would take that because he doesn't cost anything and he can slot into my middle infield. I think the potential is there for much more. By the way, the figures that we're talking about with playing time, these all assume no injuries, and we know that that's not going to happen. So almost any injury on the field, he can automatically become the starter there because of the shifting that they can do. Even if, you know, knock on wood, we don't want it to happen, but even if it was something like Mike Rizzo, that's the general manager, Anthony Rizzo, then maybe Mike Olt would move to first base and Alcantara could play third base, or Olt over to first, or no, let's say Chris Bryant comes up. He'll play third. You know, Baez, no, I screwed that one up. Baez would have to go to third. Bryant maybe goes over to first, and then Alcantara can play second. Either way, you know, I'm just making crap up. It could work, though. I don't think, even though I'm making up random scenarios, I don't think I'm off base when I say that any injury they have, they could reasonably finagle it so that Alcantara is the prime beneficiary, outside of catcher, I guess. I don't think Miguel Montero going down would do anything for Alcantara's playing time.
I think you're right, and I think a lot of what the Cubs are doing, there's so much up in the air right now. I mean, they've talked about moving Bryant to left field. There's, you know, they've got guys that all the guys you mentioned, Olt, Coughlin, you know, Baez. We don't know if he's really ready yet. There's a lot of guys who may play their way out of a job early on, or maybe it's just the type of guy that if he doesn't perform right out of the chute, he could find himself in the minors, and Alcantara gets to benefit from all those scenarios.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's a big stolen base guy. He's got some of that power. His speed is off the chart. I mean, he hit 11 triples last year in 89 minor league games. I mean, kind of ridiculous. That's, you know, a little bit high for him, but for his career, he actually has more triples in the minors, 41, than homers, which is 40. And that's over 530 games, just to give you kind of a baseline. But he also had 284 in the minors. He basically gives you everything. And that Swiss Army knife aspect of it means that by mid-May, he could qualify 2-3 different positions. So I really like that one. I think it's good under the radar, and it makes a ton of sense as far as no matter who takes a step backwards, basically anybody out of four guys could take a step backwards, and just like you said, he's the beneficiary. So I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, I'm really psyched on him, and my favorite part of it is he doesn't have to be your fifth outfielder. He can be your middle, and a lot of times, you know, your middle infielder isn't always going to be some beast anyway. So if you're taking a flyer, why not take a flyer who could pay off as well as that could? So that's why I love him. I'm trying to get him everywhere I can this year. I'm very psyched on him. So there's our eight players that we're like just really psyched on, and I just thought it'd be a fun thing to kind of get these names out there. Like I think we kind of spanned the entire ADP there, going as low as, what'd you say, 280 for Pompey? How low was he on his ADP? His was pretty dang low too. Let me see if I can find. Yeah, 282. So we got one guy down there at 282. Alcantara is down at 312. And then we had obviously McCutchen all the way up at 2. Carlos Santana is up at 58. So we kind of spanned the entire ADP there to give you eight guys that we really like, Doug.
Yeah, hey, that worked out pretty well.
Now, as we kind of close out, I just kind of want us to ask, how are you feeling going into the weekend? How many more drafts do you have left?
Right now, I really just have the one big one. That's for our Baseball Holics, the podcast I do with Sammy Reed. And you're in that one.
Yes.
And that's going to be an auction draft. We've got 15 teams and some different parameters that we've discussed on the show. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be really interesting. It'll be fun.
No, I'm very excited about that. It's going to be really interesting. I know that there's some podcast listeners from some of my podcasts, whether it's Sleeper in the Bus with Eno on Fangraphs, this podcast, or the old podcast, Towers of Power Fantasy Hour, that I did with Jason Collette, who are also in that league. They reached out, said they're SP Guide buyers, Towers listeners, etc. So it's going to be, you know, there's going to be some familiarity there. The interesting thing is not only going to be how you and I kind of battle each other and how we battle with Sammy, the three of us kind of going back and forth, but how the other competitors use having our knowledge against us. I think that's going to be really interesting too. So you and I might be freaking out trying to pump coal up on each other, and then someone else chimes in and they want to get wise, knowing how much we love him, and they bump it up even more. So that's, there's going to be some really interesting auction dynamics there that, you know, you might not see in any other kind of league where the other 12 competitors know a lot about what the other three guys are thinking. And then obviously those three guys know a ton about what the other two are thinking. It's going to be really interesting. I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah. And I'm still kind of formulating some of my strategies as far as, especially with the bid option. You know, it's one thing if you're in a draft, you take, you're going to take, they fall to you. When it comes to the bids, you know, I'm really thinking of maybe throwing some curveballs as far as who I bid and how much I bid and at what point. I think there's, you know, who to nominate, especially.
Yes.
I think there's going to be a lot of intrigue and fun there. So I'm already, you know, looking to kind of mess with things a little bit.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like I said, I think there's going to be a lot of gamesmanship and kind of craziness. So maybe we'll report back on that next week when we do the podcast. And I think I mentioned at the outset that we've been doing a lot of, you know, our Thursday show on a Friday. I think we might actually move to full on Fridays. We're going to talk with DVR about that. See if it maybe just works better. Maybe if you do this many on Fridays, maybe we're just a better fit for Fridays. So, Doug, with that, I'm going to let you go. I'm kind of doing a few things here and trying to finish up a bunch of different prep things. And then we will meet on the battlefield tomorrow evening for an auction.
Oh, I will see you there.
Take care, Doug.